Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Medical Monday, November 30th. I'm Ray Graff. Support for Medical Monday comes from Saratoga Hospital, introducing Mako Robotic Arm Assisted Surgery, the latest joint replacement technology at Saratoga Hospital. SaratogaHospital.org to learn more. Joining us this afternoon is physical therapist Matthew Goodemote of Goodemote Physical Therapy. If you have an aching or injured knee, shoulder, back, elbow, give us a call, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also reach out via email, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Matthew, always a popular guest, so call early. Physical therapy, your call is coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. You know, youth is a funny thing. When you're a youngster, you hear the old people, your mom, your dad, your grandparents complaining about those little aches and pains, and you say, well, what are they on about? That'll never happen to me. Well, throw a couple decades on, and suddenly the light is turned on, and when it's damp, your elbow hurts or your neck is stiff, then you get it. Welcome to old age, Junior. And dealing with some of those aches and pains today, hopefully, will be physical therapist Matthew Goodemote. Matthew is one of just 350 spine specialists that holds his diploma from the McKenzie Spine Institute International. He and his staff at Goodemote Physical Therapy provide a whole-body approach to therapy by offering a blend of exercise-based therapy and manual therapy. Goodemote Physical Therapy offers small group strength training classes for osteoporosis, fall prevention, and athletic performance, and the programs are designed to prevent injury and to improve your performance in sports and recreation. If you have a question about physical therapy today, this is a popular guest, and it's always great to have him here. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. And I must confess that I don't know if our guest is on the line yet. Our phones exploded. Oh, our guest is on the line. All right, let's lock him in there. Our phones exploded about a minute before the show started, I think right about before Zach hit the theme. And, you know, I don't know if we'll be able to take calls for a little while, but we'll give it a shot here. My computer is down, but you know what? We just wing it sometimes. Matthew Goodemote, welcome back. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you, Ray. Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
I can, yes.
Yeah,
very well.
Well, that's...
I got kicked off right before the music started, yeah. Just like you said.
Well, that's so. One of those panic moments. Now, remember, you know, before COVID, we have guests in the studio, and you'd be here, and if the phone lines went down, you would shoot the breeze a bit, and we would vamp until ready. But, you know, you're on the phone, too. So I thought, here I am, not a physical therapist. What the heck am I going to do now?
But it looks... I just make it up anyways, right?
You know, but it's funny. I did a little riff about youth and not understanding the pains of old age. And I must share a personal story. Thanksgiving morning, 9 o'clock in the morning, my wife says, okay, we've been brining the bird for 2 days. Let's get it out of the fridge. And it's in a big, huge military spec bag full of fluid.
Yeah.
And I'm holding the tray that has the bag with the bird. And it's on the bottom shelf of the fridge. And she says, okay, the bag is stuck on the shelf above. Let me get that. So I'm holding out. My arms are extended. And I'm holding this 20-pound bag, 20-pound bird with maybe 5 pounds of fluid. Out at a full arm extension, somewhat bent over, and after she got the bag unlodged from the top, the shelf above, I picked it up, put it out on the counter, threw my back out completely. This is a turkey-related injury. And I said, okay, well, this welcome to old age. This is how it works. I hobbled around. I'm still a little stiff today. And it's in the lower back. So What exactly did I do? I assume it's maybe muscles that are like, oh, yeah, I'm still here. You haven't used these in a few years. What was it?
Well, because of the prolonged position you were in, muscle still is a possibility. But usually, when you are hobbled afterwards, where it's really difficult to move around,
Yeah.
it's actually usually the disc that causes that.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
And it doesn't mean a bad thing, though. It's just the prolonged position. There's people who go in long car rides, for example, and they first try to get out, they feel back pain, and it's just because of the sustained position. And in your case, you were also holding 25 pounds out in front of you, and that increases how much force is in the back by like tenfold. I mean, it's a lot of force going through the spine just to stabilize, to have your arms hold that thing out there. So the pain, and the key with it is the movement. So you said you're still a little stiff. It's
Oh,
trying to
yeah.
get your mobility all the way back completely. And until you do, you are still susceptible to another relapse of Thanksgiving Day. So I would really work on just doing some gentle range of motion for the spine and getting the motion all the way back.
Well, my wife makes fun of me. I walk like Red Fox now on the old Sanford and Son show around the house. So it's pretty funny. I cured the pain with a fair amount of bourbon on Thanksgiving and ibuprofen since then. So we'll survive. All right, now I think our phones are up. So let's
Okay.
try to grab one. I can't see them on my screen, so I'm going to hope Joe Makowitz, our screener, is doing a bang-up job. Let's go to Rick in Pittsfield. Rick, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi.
Quick question. I have been diagnosed with a ruptured disc between S1 and L1. Supposedly, I'm not a good candidate for the easy surgery because there's so much stuff outside of the disc that the surgeon said it's going to be a more complicated surgery. They gave
Wow.
me the shot of cortisone. It got me off the floor from screaming. I was on the floor screaming for
Yeah.
about, I don't know, 4 months, 5 months.
Oh, wow.
And now I
Okay.
can get a couple steps in and go again. But it's coming back. They're masking it with painkillers and gabapentin.
Yeah.
So my two questions are, one, I've heard two different philosophies. The physical therapist at the time that I was working with was trying to do the toothpaste back into the toothpaste tube and do the exercises for that. When I said that to the surgeon, he almost chopped my head off, and he says, "No such thing cannot happen. This is out, and it's going to stay out." So the question is, can I do some PT to try to? And basically, they told me to try to get the stuff that's outside of the area to diffuse by the body to chew it up, and see if that will get better over time. If not, I got to do this other surgery.
Right. So the toothpaste part is the disc. And so the disc, the consistency inside the disc, is often described to be like toothpaste. So it's kind of a thick substance. And what happens when you bend forward like Ray did with the turkey is the disc fluid will naturally and normally move towards the back wall of the disc. So this is a tricky thing we're talking about because the language that's used is often blurred, meaning a bulging disc compared to a herniated disc, compared to a protruded disc, compared to an extruded disc. So an extruded disc, from what I learned and the way we would describe it in the McKenzie method, is that the wall of the disc has actually torn and the contents of the disc have leaked out. And so when the surgeon says that there's no way to put the toothpaste, that's ridiculous. That would be an example where he's 100% right, because if it's an extruded disc, it's incompetent. It can't move back to where you want it to be. So the level of the disc injury would determine whether what the surgeon said is true or not, because a disc bulge most definitely moves, and we have all kinds of documentation of how that happens. So that's the first part. If it's a true extruded disc, then that content of inside the disc cannot be moved backwards. So the typical exercises we do to try it would be ineffective. However, it's always worth trying because it could just be a misdiagnosis from the MRI. So so when you ask about PT, would it be worth trying? Yes, it would be worth trying, but there would need to be a time limit on it, and there would also need to be a symptom limit on it. Meaning, if you have just back pain, and I don't mean to discount the severity of it, but I'm just saying the location of it. So if it's just in the lower back, then that absolutely warrants trying more physical therapy. when it becomes the surgeon's necessity is when you start to lose strength. So if you start to have motor loss in the leg and you have unremitting pain on top of that and an MRI confirming it, your likelihood of recovery gets smaller and smaller naturally. Now, I will say I've treated the patients that have had these massive herniations. The record was a herniation that dropped down two levels, and the body absolutely reabsorbs it. But it takes a long time. And in this case, it was like a 3 to 5 year process. And so the reason that often people go to surgery is not because the body is incapable of healing it. It's how long the body takes to heal it. And for some people, it can literally be months and or years. So that's where the surgery comes into play. The level that you described is going to be the L5-S1, which is the most common area that's injured. And usually around it means there's degeneration and things happening too, which can lead to more complications with the surgery. So I'm kind of piecing together based on what you're telling me what's going on there. But if it were me, I would absolutely still try. And regardless of whether you need surgery or not, you absolutely need to try and restore motion, get your strength. So if you have to have the surgery, then you're going in as best prepared as you possibly can for a good outcome.
Rick, thanks a lot for the call. We're going to take a quick break here. Rob Chacon is going to try to get me logged back in our telephone screen. We'll take a break. Our guest is Matthew Goodemot. We'll be back. Welcome back to Adventures in Pandemic Radio. It's Vox Pop, Medical Monday today, physical therapy with Matthew Goodemot. The phones exploded right before showtime, and we're getting it back. It's kind of like mission control down at Cape Kennedy. You know what I mean, Matt?
Absolutely.
Well, we're getting there, and I think we can still take calls. The number here is 800-348-2551, and you can also email us, and we've had a couple people do that. This one is from Robin. Robin says, I've been told by my orthopedic surgeon after an x-ray that I have a lot of arthritis in my shoulder and that I'll need a replacement in my lifetime. It hurts, grinds, pops, and makes noise. What exercises can I safely do to keep it going as long as possible? And that is from Robin.
So most of the theme for me when it comes to what's like the basic things to do with an injury, one is to keep your mobility. So with arthritic joints, we tend to lose our mobility, and that has a negative effect, and it regresses quickly afterwards. And some of it's because it hurts, people stop using it, but it's actually the exact opposite. So range of motion is always my top number one. Get your motion going and keep it as best you can. And for the shoulder, it's absolutely working on the rotator cuff, which is a group of four different muscles, and making sure you strengthen those muscles. And then the shoulder blade, the scapula, it's working on the scapula as well. In our clinic, we would do a bunch of manual therapy as well just to keep the tissue nice and mobile and healthy, and then show the patient how to do that at home. It's a little tricky to say over the phone, though, how to do that.
Indeed. All right, this one's from Lori in Kingston. Lori says, so great that you're on today. I'm almost 60. I have osteoporosis and disc bulging / compression in my lumbar spine. I'm doing exercises to strengthen my core, but I've had the same pain and stiffness on the left side of L1 for about a year. Nothing has worked for more than a few minutes at a time, and I've been through orthopedics and an MRI. I've been told by my chiropractor and massage therapist that it's related to my posture. Can a physical therapist help with postural imbalance issues like this? And that's from Lori in Kingston.
The answer to that question is yes, a solid yes. And we have an osteoporosis program that we do, and one of the most important things for someone with osteoporosis is to do strength training. So the postural corrections and strength training kind of go hand in hand. It is very difficult to maintain a proper posture without the education and learning how to hold it and then to build the strength around it to maintain it. So the two things is, number one, I do think that if she gets a little bit of temporary relief with chiropractic or massage, it means that you can extend the length of the timeout for how much the relief is. So I like to tell people, it's like once you can open the crack the window open, then you can get it open even further. So it, the hard part is getting even a small period of relief. And the fact that she does have that would suggest she can get longer periods of it. And the typical way is mobility first, stability or strength second, and working those into a daily routine.
All right, this one's from Audrey, and then we'll go back to the phones. Our guest is Matthew Goodemote. It's Physical Therapy Today, 800-348-2551, if you want to jump in here. Audrey writes, what yoga poses are good, bad, other exercises? This is osteoporosis in lumbar 3 and 4.
Okay, when it comes to osteoporosis, bending forward positions are contraindicated. They're at least a precaution, and then for some people, depending on how severe it is, contraindicated. So that means any type of bending movement, and the research shows we bend forward 2,000 to 3,000 times a day, like putting our socks on, you know, getting in and out of cars, things like that. But to do it for yoga, it would definitely need to be under the supervision of a physical therapist primarily to make sure the technique is proper and to learn how to do that so you protect your back. So forward flexion is a big no-no. And the one to do, and this would be for anyone with osteoporosis, is a simple backwards bend where you put the hands in the small of your lower back and then bend backwards. And part of that is to unload the front part of the vertebrae where the compression fractures with osteoporosis happen and put more of the pressure through the back part of the vertebrae. And then also lots of postural education and exercise. And the program we offer, we do a whole bunch of lifting. In fact, our first group, they're all lifting over 100 pounds doing a deadlift. So it's kind of exciting to see a bunch of women who started off fearful of lifting to now be able to lift heavy.
Oh my gosh.
And with osteoporosis, the number one thing is strength training, without a doubt. Strength training, nutrition are your number one, number two. And yoga is definitely great for lots of things, but I would value the strength training number one.
Wow, they do 100 pounds. They could come over to my house before the next Thanksgiving.
And do the turkey.
Take care of that. All right, let's go back to the phones. Matthew Goodemote is our guest. 800-348-2551. Walt in Pownall. Walt, you're on.
Yes. Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I have a condition that limits, my quadriceps are fighting my hamstrings, and I'm getting, you know, bad tendonitis above my kneecaps. So I was wondering if there was any stretching exercises that could help me with that.
So whenever you're getting into a tendon type of injury, stretching is not the most effective way to deal with it. So we thought for a long time that stretching would prevent it, but it's not. So the strength training that you would do, and there's nutritional things you need to do for tendon health. So with a tendonitis, you would start with isometrics, which is where you're contracting the muscle, but you're not taking it through a range of motion. And then from there, you would work yourself from a pain-free position, which would be a high squat, working down into a lower position. And there's really quite a bit of evidence, especially over the last 3 to 5 years, about the value of strength training for the health of a tendon. And from isometrics, you would go into a thing called eccentrics, which are negatives. And those would be like your number one, number two thing to do. Nutritionally, you want to make sure that you're having have vitamin C and also collagen. So collagen is found in meat products. So you'd want to make sure if you're a vegetarian that you find a way to get collagen, although there's no way to do it without having animal products. But that's been shown to help tendons improve.
Okay, well, this is not due to an injury. It's a spasticuresis is the condition that I...
Yeah. It's still, when it comes to tendons, they respond best to strength training. And what really happens when you're doing an isometric anyways is that when you're holding a position, the tendon can't stay in the position for very long. So the muscles are contracting and relaxing and contracting and relaxing. And it will lead to a lengthening of the tendon because your muscles will start to give way a little bit. So it's this indirect way of, quote, stretching. But there's quite a bit of evidence that when you stretch, you affect your Golgi tendon organs and your muscle spindles, which lead to a delayed reaction from the muscle itself. And so the strength training would still be in there. And then if you're doing stretching, it's not that I'm anti-stretching. It's just whenever you get into tendon things, I always want people to know strength training is an important part of it. And in which case, you would just do a basic quadricep stretch, which is laying on your stomach on the floor or even on the bed is fine. And then you bring your foot towards your butt. And if you can't reach your butt, then you would use some type of strap or a belt or something to help. And just gently until you feel a pull on the muscle. And then I would just limit how long you're doing it because I wouldn't want to have a negative effect on it. So, you know, a 10-second stretch would be plenty and just doing it repeatedly throughout the day. So a lot of times people want to just stretch once a day, but if you're going to go down that road, then I would recommend shorter duration holds and more frequent repetitions with it.
Turn my mic on again. Walt, thank you for the call. The number is 800-348-2551. Zach, the engineer, looking at me strangely, but that's nothing new. Matthew Goodemote is our guest. It's physical therapy today on Vox Pop. And you can also email voxpopwamc.org. Let's go to Jim in Matamoros, Pennsylvania. Jim.
Is the coronavirus long-term causing arthritic-like conditions and muscle soreness around the joints?
It's too early for us to tell any of the long-term effects. So long-term effects usually means over the course of years, and of course it hasn't even been out for a year yet. So, and I don't actually know the answer what's going to happen with joints. Muscle soreness, I have heard that it does linger for some people, but the percentage is small.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
You're welcome.
Our number is 800-348-2551. Physical therapy today. Matt Goodemote is our guest. And let's see here. Looks like Emily in Plainfield, Mass. Emily, you're on.
Hello, Ray and Matthew. Hello. I had surgery in, of all places, my armpit a couple weeks ago. And 4 days after that, I kind of stretched for something a couple times and then went, oh, maybe I'm not supposed to do that. And then I've been really uncomfortable. I even went back to see the surgeon before post-op, and she said, well, the nurse practitioner, she's like, it's a little inflamed, and maybe you irritated it, and it's going to take a long time. And then I'm still really uncomfortable, and I went for my post-op today, and the surgeon was like, you're not even swollen. It is healing beautifully. And I'm like, well, why am I so uncomfortable? So she wants me to move some more. And I said, yeah, sometimes that really hurts. And she wants me to gradually move some more. And she told me to do things like walk the hand up the wall as far as it can go and mark it and go a little further each day. And I was like, gee, I thought she was going to do something drastic, like take stitches out. No, they dissolve. You're fine. But it feels like something's tugging on my armpit. And then so then I came home and the physical therapy show was on Fox Pop. And I thought, well, maybe I'll call and see if they have any suggestions for me.
Free advice never hurts. All right, go ahead, Matthew.
So when it comes to any type of surgery, there are windows for a period of time where you can have increase in your symptoms. And if you've seen by the doctor, and there's, like they said, there's no swelling and everything looks like it's healing well, then it's a great sign. And pain doesn't mean injury. Pain just means something could have been irritated. And it could also mean you're just healing because it's still relatively new. So it can take up to 2 weeks, for example, and sometimes even longer after surgery for that those symptoms to go away. But range of motion exercises, as long as the doctor cleared them, I would absolutely recommend that. And it's gentle range of motion. And similar to what I said earlier, I'm an advocate of frequency. So I would rather have you do like reach your hand up the wall, do it two times, and then wait an hour and do it again. And so basically what you're trying to do is reteach the muscle and the tissue to be pushed and pulled and tugged on. And so you do it gently and cautiously at this stage of the game. So early after surgery, again, the first week or two, definitely, and then from 2 to 4 weeks, it'd still be a gradual. But range of motion, if there should be no restriction because it wasn't a joint surgery, so it's just the soft tissue, and it would just be a recommendation of look at the non-surgical side and what it can do and start to do the same type of things with the surgical side. And just real gradual and gentle, and again, 2 or 3 repetitions of something, and then wait an hour and do it again, and just kind of play around with range of motion, and using the other side as the guide.
Okay, thank you very much.
Emily, you're welcome.
Thank you for the call. Matthew Goodemote is our guest. It's Vox Pop. It is Medical Monday, physical therapy today. Jim in Adams, Massachusetts. Jim, you're up.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, TKL speaker.
Thank you.
Yes, Matthew Goodenlot. Good to have you on. I'm going to try and be concise, which is hard for me. 8 months ago, it's been like 36 weeks, I took a fall at work, fell off a ladder, and landed on my pelvis. multiple fractures, the inferior and superior pelvic rim. I'm reading now, and there was a sacral fracture as well. It is my problem is, and with physical therapy, I went for quite some time, and they were treating me basically for hip issues. I never had an issue with range of motion in my hip. I think they were confusing things. And bearing weight is still very, very difficult for me. There's some callus formation. It's not healing bone to bone. I'm just wondering, as far as therapies, are there any kind of strength training I can do, like Pilates, to toughen up the core? The thing's not healing. I'll hand it over to you.
So when it comes to pelvic fractures, just know that they're notoriously painful. So the fact that it's eight months out and you're still having pain is not uncommon at all. I treated a woman who was actually away for the winter and she fell, and it was probably a solid like 9 or 10 months and she was still having pain. So strength training is absolutely the way to go. If you have access to physical therapy and aquatic, doing pool therapy, it's a great way to unload and still get the muscles working. So if you have access to that, that would be my number one recommendation. As far as things like Pilates and whatnot, they're okay to do, but this is the pelvis is obviously weight bearing. So you would want to do some exercises weight bearing. So it could be as simple as just walking, you know, from one end of a hall to another and not trying to push it, but doing that two or three times a day to get the muscles used to and acclimatized to the movement and the weight bearing of the movement. As far as strengthening of the core, you would want to do the entire core. So that means you want to do your front muscles, your side muscles, and your back muscles all the way around like an apple core. So it's not just the abdominals. You would definitely want to use exercises for the glute muscles, things like bridges, for example, and clamshells. Those would be big ones. And then there's a one we call the dead bug or dying bug, which is for the abdominal muscles. And those would be the kind of safe ones you can do laying down. And then from there, it's more important that you start to find an exercise or two that you can do regularly. And as it starts to get easier for you, then you increase it. So it's all about the progression. And a lot of times where the people get into these plateaus where it doesn't seem like it's making any gains is because it's hurting, of course. So they're thinking, I better not do too much. So it needs a strategic approach where you're monitoring it closely, and a progression is one more repetition is a progression. So you're always trying to go in that general direction. And again, with the weight bearing type of things, like if you walked in a hallway from one end to the other, you know, that's a, let's say a 30, 40 foot long walk. And then you do that three times a day. And then from there you go to down and back. So now it's 60 times, three times a day. And you just kind of keep over a course of a week or two, adding a little bit more each week. And by the way, weight bearing is how the bone gets its strength. So when you're contracting muscles and you're bearing weight, that's where the fractures heal better. So you want to make sure that you are doing those type of things and not avoiding because of pain during the movement. It would be that when you stop, the intensity of the pain should diminish. And as long as it does, just know that you're safe. And if you proceed, I always give the example of a marathon runner. You don't go out and run a marathon when you've had an injury. You recover and you gradually add a mile here, a mile there until you can get back to the marathon. So if your marathon is to be able to walk pain-free, then you got to start by walking with some discomfort. And just don't go from zero to 100. Do a little doses of it and progress over the course of weeks as opposed to days.
Jim, we got to take a break here, but thank you for the call. Matthew Goodenlot is our guest, 800-348-2551. If you have a physical therapy question, we'll be right back. We'll be right back. Zappa for you on a Monday, a medical Monday. We're doing physical therapy today with Matthew Goodemote. The number is 800-348-2551. A couple of emails here. This is from Chris, and the subject heading is sciatic pain? Question mark. Chris writes, I have intermittent sciatic pain 3 to 4 days a week. It's been going on for years. Doctor suggests 4 ibuprofens every 4 to 6 hours till pain subsides. Does work, but leery about so much ibuprofen. Symptoms of tightness and pain, lower left back, performs a hamstring to top of left calf, sometimes keeps me up at night. Stretching and massage, hot tubs help, but not always possible. Any other solutions, long-term options? That is from Chris.
So sciatica is a nerve that comes out of the, actually it's a group of nerves, but and when people have symptoms that are primarily in the back and the leg, but don't go down into the foot, I'm a little suspicious of, is it truly involving the nerve? So it went, he said, to the back of his calf, so it is possible because it's below the knee. The reason why that's important to me is because it starts to clarify what the intensity of the problem is, or the severity of the problem, rather. And I agree with the email that having a lot of ibuprofen isn't always the best strategy for something like this, because it'll have negative effects on other things besides the back. And there are absolutely things that can be done for sciatica. And number one would be doing regular daily exercises. And so the days that he's feeling good, or even the moments that he's feeling good, to try to prevent the bad times from coming again, or at least diminish the intensity. And that requires exercise, and it would also require an evaluation to decide which exercise, but it would be something that I would highly recommend. And then number two would be to do strengthening exercises. And again, it's hard to make a recommendation without knowing more details about what's provoking it. Typically, when it's intermittent, it means that there's something in the course of the day that he's doing that's causing the agitation.
Yeah.
And for example, it could be sitting, because that's a common one. So it could be as simple as changing how he is sitting using a lumbar roll, or how long he's sitting, setting a timer to get up and move around every 30 minutes instead of sitting still for an hour. And sometimes those are the type of things that just get the momentum going in the right direction.
Okay, one more email and then back to the phones. This is from David. Interesting one. David writes, is there any research you've seen on the relationship of fasting or intermittent fasting on recovery in general, or for any of the specific issues you deal with? And that's from David.
That is a good question, and I've read a lot about this, and there are some things that are very positive about intermittent fasting for our overall health and well-being. However, everything is compared to the Mediterranean diet, because it's the gold standard that's been out there for decades and has had just a boatload of research on it. So although there's some promising tests about intermittent fasting, part of the problem we have is that it's done, most of the big tests are done on animals, and it's hard to extrapolate what happens to animals as to what happens with humans.
Yeah.
So if I was going to make a blanket recommendation, it would be for a Mediterranean-based diet, because that's one that's consistently shown to be the most beneficial for most people. And healing-wise, it's the anti-inflammatory type of foods. So if you're in intermittent fasting and you're still eating processed foods, I don't think it's going to help. So I think the fact that it's intermittent fasting is going to help for some things in our health and well-being, you know, perhaps joint health, muscle strength, things like that over the long haul. But the data is just too preliminary at this point to know for sure.
All right. So you're suggesting then if I lay off ring-dings for 8 hours and then start again, it's not really going to help.
Exactly.
All right. Fair enough. I'll check that one off the list. Let's go to Bob in Schenectady. Bob, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've had pain on the right side of my head, the base of my skull, and on the right side of my neck, and down into my in the middle of my clavicle for quite some time. Not always all of them at once, but I had gone to physical therapy, and it made it worse, and then I was having everything all at once. All those pains were happening at the same time. I stopped doing the chin retraction and all that stuff, and stopped doing everything.
Yeah.
Things are kind of back where they were. I still have some problems, but I've been doing something. I don't know if you are familiar with something called face pulls.
No.
It's an exercise with, when you put some weight on a machine and it's sort of over your head. Sure. You pull it towards your face and you spread it out as you come back, and you pull your arms back. and then let it. And that's taken the pain away for some time. I read about it on the internet, and I don't know. I don't know if I'm doing the right thing. I have severe osteoporosis. I don't know if I should go to a chiropractor or not. I'm afraid of getting my head yanked around or something.
So when the symptoms you're describing, they do sound like a cervical headache, which means that the symptoms are coming right at the base of the skull where the cranial nerves exit and they wrap around the side of the face and down towards your clavicle. So it seems pretty classic in that regard. There's a technique that I use. So what side of the face or head is it bothering you?
It's on the right side. Everything's on the right side.
On the right side. So what you would do is, in a laying down position, you would lay down and bring your head so your left ear goes towards your left shoulder. So you would side bend to the left and then rotate your head towards the right. And this is a simple maneuver that can alleviate the symptoms on the right side. It sounds almost counterproductive because you're going to the left, but you go to the left to get the rest of the joints out of the way, so to speak, and then the right rotation can often abolish the pain. So it's definitely worth trying that. And then the other thing would be just some basic manual therapy techniques. And what we do in the clinic is I would have you, you know, I'd have you laying on your back, and I would just press my finger into the knot that's at the base of your skull, and not super aggressive, but firm, and just literally hold it there until the muscle relaxed. And it can be anywhere from 30 seconds to a couple minutes. And then anytime you felt tension there, to do the same thing, which in the beginning can be a giant pain in the butt because it could be 5-10 times a day that you have to do that. But it's getting the momentum to alleviate the symptoms to allow you so you don't have to do it as often. And then the other thing would be to be very conscientious about your posture. So the recommendation the PT that you went to gave you was to do the chin tuck. And I used to use that about 15, 20 years ago, too. And as you found out, it's not always that effective. The position I told you about is way more effective. That's why I don't do the chin tucks anymore. But the other thing I don't do is the chin tucks is too much movement. So what I would have you do instead is just to have the chair 2 or 3 inches away from the wall and simply lean back so the back of your head is touching the wall. And it should feel very mild pull or stretch right at the base of your skull, and then just gently bring your chin towards your throat slightly. So it's all very mild. It's a very mild pull, very mild stretch, and then you would stay in that position for anywhere, again, from 30 seconds to a couple minutes, providing that while you were in the position, your symptoms were alleviating. So everything that I've just suggested is about taking the symptoms away, and it's always supposed to be that way. So when you're done doing whatever the movement is or the exercise is, you should feel better afterwards for your specific condition that you're talking about. It doesn't apply for someone who just had a knee replacement, for example, but for you, it needs to be that feels better after you've done it. Because if it doesn't, and if it feels worse right after you did it, then all you've done is provoke it. Yep. And my guess is in therapy is that's what you were doing, is you're provoking it and hence getting worse.
Absolutely.
All right, well, Bob, we got to move it along here, but thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Pat in Niskayuna. Pat, you're on. Hello, Pat. Hi. Hello, Pat. You're on. And
the car.
Oh, boy, that's a shame.
Hi, darling.
Hello, Pat. Hi. We've hi, how are you? You're on the radio now. And well, go ahead.
Hi. I've been having a groin issue where I'm crying by them, and then I'll be walking, and it'll give out.
Pat, just a sec. If you're stopped, can you go on to handset? Because we're having a heck of a time understanding you. No, this is not going well.
I'm sorry.
That's better. Go ahead.
Is that better?
Sure.
Oh, okay. I've been having a groin issue. And I'll be fine, and then I walk a lot. I'm up on my feet walking all day, and I'm wondering if that has something to do with it. And then it'll kind of collapse, and it'll be a little painful, and then I kind of have to limp for a while.
Oh, boy.
How old are you?
I'm wondering if you have any.
I'm sorry, but how old are you?
In my 50s.
Yeah.
In my 50s.
I would have your hip joint evaluated. The groin is most commonly the hip joint. And so especially with weight bearing type of things, and the more you're on it, the worse it gets, and it even feels like a collapse. It all sounds very much like a hip joint, and most likely the beginnings of some arthritis or degeneration in there. But it would absolutely be something that's appropriate to get an x-ray for. It doesn't mean you need to have a hip replacement or anything like that. It just identifies, is that what's going on? And if it is a degenerative condition, then you would want to do a whole bunch of strengthening exercises and range of motion exercises to maintain the health of the joint to the best of your ability. And there's another tissue inside there, and it's fairly common. Women tend to have more problems than men with it. It's called the labrum. So if the x-ray didn't show anything, then I would want to generally, I would try therapy for a while, and if it didn't work, then I would go and get an MRI and see if there's more injury inside there. But regardless, strength training is one of the best things you can do. And again, having somebody take a look at it to see what you're dealing with and what level of pathology is there, if there's any pathology. And if there's no pathology, then you get to do strength training anyways, because it would mean something's going on in the muscles around it. So,
well, I just got a bone density and it was fine. But should I start with a orthopedic or a physical therapist? Oh.
It doesn't really matter. I mean, you can have your family doctor get the x-ray of the hip joint to see and have you go to PT from there. It's the kind of thing that if you're going to PT, we would do things to try to obviously improve it. And after a period of time, if it wasn't improving, then you would go to the orthopedist. And either way, the most likely you're going to get sent to PT, so you can kind of start that way, family doctor, PT. If it doesn't pan out, then you can go to the orthopedist. But it's not, it doesn't sound like, because you are walking a lot, as you said, so it doesn't sound like it's going to be a emergency, like, holy crap, we've got to get her into surgery today. It's more like you probably have some things to work out, and you may have to, you know, get some exercises, like I said, strengthening and whatnot. But it's just a good idea to get it evaluated to make sure to see where you're really at right now.
Pat, thanks a lot for the call. Matthew Goodemote is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. Oh, 4 or 5 minutes left here. And let's go to Chris in Plattsburgh. Chris, how are things in Plattsburgh?
Very good. Very wet.
Yeah, here too.
thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I had back surgery. I had fusion of L5, 4, and 3 3 years ago. Been trying to regain the ability to walk, but I haven't been able to do that. I have a lot of weakness on my left side, my lateral side.
Yep.
And I use the water. I try to go to the YMCA and swim in the, walk back and forth in the pool in the low end. And typical exercises is raise my knee up as far as I can while standing, and then drop down into sort of like a runner stretch lunge.
Yep.
And if I do it like regularly, it kind of helps. But I was interested in what you said about strengthening, you said quad isometrics.
Yeah. Yes.
I do stretching, and you're saying stretching to, I'm thinking my tendon back there, because they fused a permanent sway back. And, how do you do isometrics?
Yeah. Well, a couple things. So in the pool itself, you would want to make sure that you're kicking your legs too. So standing with your hands on the wall, kick your legs out to the side, one leg at a time, and then backwards as well. So you start to work on the muscles in your butt. And you need to have strength in your core. And the core, remember, is like an apple core. So it's your abdominals, but it's also your glute muscles and your lower back muscles. So if you're still having a hard time with walking, then it's incredibly important to get in to learn to do some strengthening exercises. And isometrics would be good, but it's not going to be as simple like strengthening for just the quadriceps. You need to strengthen the hip pelvis area to get the stability there to allow you to bear weight. And if you can walk even a couple steps, then it would be to do what I suggest to another caller, where on purpose you walk like 30 feet and then sit down and recover and then walk 30 feet again. So it's important to keep progressing that though, and have some like intentional strategy where it's either using a distance, adding 3 feet a week, or a time, adding 30 seconds more of walking, and just gradually add a little bit more to it, but also allowing yourself to recover before you do the exercise again. And the core strengthening stuff is what you would absolutely need to do. And there's a whole progression. I don't know if you did do therapy, but it would be highly recommended to do that, because if you can physically stand up and you can take a couple steps in the pool, we sure as heck ought to be able to get you so you can walk on land at least a little bit. So maybe not walking 5 miles.
Forearm crutches that I use. Should I go to the mall and walk around and then try to lift up the crutches a few steps at a time?
No, I would rather have you perfect your gait and the crutches, where when you're walking, you're using them only for balance, so you're not putting a lot of weight through them, but not trying to lift them up, because that throws off the mechanics of your gait. So I would rather have you
do
using your arms like you would naturally walk, so right arm, left foot, left arm, right foot, and really trying to perfect the mechanics of the gait. And then in the pool, I would have you walking forward, but I'd also have you walking backwards, and I'd have you walking side to side. And that movement that you did with the forward lunge, I'd have you do it with a sideways lunge. So there's a lot of exercises you can do in the pool to kick up the intensity. You can use a kickboard and push against it when you're walking to increase the intensity. So you're, again, progressing what you're doing. And in the water, it's brilliant, because if you lose your balance or something, you just go into the water. So,
yeah, as long as it's not too deep. Matthew, thank you. We're done, sir. Thank you for bearing with our technical difficulties today, and we will talk to you soon, okay?
Okay, very good. Thank you, Ray.
Appreciate it. Support comes from Berkshire Center for Weight Loss Surgery, with a focus on life skills and support for long-term success with sleeve gastrectomy and gastric bypass surgery. Monthly seminars open to the public. 413-395-7510 for registration. Once again, thanks to physical therapist Matthew Goodemote for being on the line with us today. Thank you for listening. Many apologies if we didn't get to your call, and we left several emails in the email bag, but write them again next time Matthew is here, and it won't be long. Write them again early and call again. Get in line early, and we will get your question in. We'll try anyway. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Joe Makowicz did a superb job answering and screening the calls today, because I didn't know, I was going on faith that Joe would do a good job, and he did. So well done, sir. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's Real Estate. Right now, stand by for the Media Project.